Hi, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Flock and Gather. It's Alan Scher. I'm your host. I run the Spa Industry Association. And today I'm going to make the world really, really small. I have with me Daniel Zeman. I'm going to call him Dan, but you should call him Mr. Zeman. And he's the writer of books. He's a PhD, Dan? You're a PhD, right?
Not at my age. I said I got to get back in the world. All the PhD guys are teachers, and they never had to deal with humans.
Oh, God. I want to tell our viewers how small this world is. So most people know that I've lived in Minnesota and California most of my life, and that Kathy and I have now settled in Cave Creek. And Dan is also a Minnesota family, although we didn't really know each other up north. But of course, we're in homes about 5 minutes apart now that we are down in Cave Creek, Arizona. So Dan Zeman, welcome to Flock and Gather. And thank you for letting Kathy and I and Rocco into Arizona.
Well, Alan, you know, it's still amazing to me about how small town Minneapolis is. I mean, we've had conversations that I will mention someone just to be polite. So I put a name to the store and you go, well, I know him or I know her or I know him. And I'm going, okay, let's do this. Let's just pretend we know everybody the same. But it is it's so fun to, I don't know. I mean, again, my start was back in 1980 out of undergraduate with the Northwest Rack and Swim Clubs. And the number of people who came in there were just such people that I was born and raised in Rochester, Minnesota. My mother worked for the Mayo Clinic, so I had this medical background in my family all the time. I'm an undergraduate in math and stats, but when it came to the club world, the fitness center world, Marvin Harb, the two Jewish owners, were so interesting. But you know, I never understood how many people came into that facility who were, you know, the Pillsbury name to me was, you know, like, wasn't a name. It was, but you kind of go, oh no, that's the Pillsbury's.
Yeah, was it that, was Minnesota.
What's that?
The Pillsbury name was Minnesota.
Yeah, and but Dayton's, I didn't know that. You know, we went to the store, and I'm going, oh no, there was a family name. And so, you know, I was surprised how small a community, when I first walked in, everybody in that, even that, the St. Louis Park one, or the one on Cedar Lake Road, every member knew another member. They were as tight as, yeah. Well, you know, you'd say, well, hey, I was thinking of getting my car fixed. And the guy would go, see that guy right over there? That's what he does. Or see that guy right there? He's this. And I'm going, what is this, like a big phone book? This was like it was so much fun. I still look back. I love those days.
We're talking about, for those of you who don't know, the precursor to the Lifetime Life Spa type fitness clubs was Northwest Racket and Swim Club on Cedar Lake Road. It was owned by a couple of real estate guys named Harv Ratner and Mark Wolfson. And it really was the first mega-sized club in the country, wasn't it, Dan?
Yeah, there was a group out of Chicago that also had tennis. But Marvin Harv, you know, I still look back at those guys because they took a gamble, and I've talked about this before. You know, they knew people would play racquetball and they would swim because of the winter. They knew that these leisure activities, tennis was a leisure thing like golf, but they also knew there was a big social compartment to this, and that's what they created. So Chicago had one, but Marvin Harb's 10 clubs in the Minneapolis area were legendary. And so when we said that we were going to put these 10 knowledge machines and do strength training into this concept, you'd pay and actually work out. Marvin Harv said, Dan, you know, and it's funny. He said to me, he goes, hey, we call this a racket and swim club because they play rackets and swim here. What do you mean work out? And I'm going, and he was like, I'm going, Marv. And he goes, no. What are we going to call racket, swim, and exercise? And I'm going, but he's okay, here's the deal. You get the lunchroom, and for $3 a month, and you get, you know, and it was hilarious because I quickly realized how underappreciated, how uneducated most people were when it came to should people who were pregnant exercise.
Dan, what year was that? When did they start that club?
August of 1980 is when we put in the Nalls machines, but they're around in the late 70s when he pushed the tennis and rackets in.
Late 70s, right?
Late 70s. But, you know, so, and Lifetime, the thing that I give Marvin Harper credit for is that, you know, I sometimes look at business, well, I ask my wife, I look at the business models of life that I've, you know, we charge $3 a month to join this lunchroom crowd, right? And we had 10 machines in, and he said, okay, you got to get so many members and we'll see if it works to pay back the way I paid for the equipment. And then we had a Burnsville club, which is south of the river, and they put one in there. And so a year and a half later, I'd come back to work at the hospital because one of the docs had seen me at the Northwest Club, said, hey, you're pretty smart. Can you want to open up this cardiac rehab program for me? And I saw Marvin Harvin put all the strength machines in all the clubs and raised everybody's dues $3 a month. And I'm going, wait a minute. So he had 100,000 memberships. He just got $300,000 more a month on a business model that I showed work. And I was going to go, hey, Marv, whatever happened, that thing that wasn't going to work 2 years ago. But they were so important. I mean, I learned a lot of the business side of
And Dan, did they end up selling the clubs to Lifetime, or I can't remember what the...
I think the story, it gets a little more bizarre because after the hospital with the cardiacs and the diabetics, those days for me were equally as eye-opening for why don't people want to exercise. They'd rather have their feet amputated as a diabetic than walk, and why on heart attack people quit smoking than they do. But then we opened up a club called the Flagship Athletic Club in Eden Prairie.
Yes.
And part of the buy from Lifetime was Lifetime had to buy all the Northwest clubs and they had to buy the Flagship. That was so that those two went together. And then so Brian McCrady, who's the CEO of that, had all the clubs basically in Minneapolis under him. He didn't want anything else. So the Flagship was part of that package. But so Marvin Harb came to the owner, Bill Nagley, and said, okay, we'll sell all these. And that's how. But, you know, that's the great thing about my age is that you go back to when it wasn't really started. And now you see this industry of fitness centers or clubs or spas and wellness centers. And everyone's trying to figure out who they are and what they do. And yet then you have John Q. Public in the mainstream America doesn't know to wash their hands. And I go,
hey, Dan, I think it is amazing. You know, when you watch trends over years, right? That's why some people are great futurists and thinkers, because they took a shot on you. It turned out pretty well. They started a trend that today is just kind of ubiquitous. Like, we know there's workout places on every other corner. Well, why wouldn't there be? But in the 70s, you were really talking about heavy weights and stinky basements, right? I mean, this was the nature of working out at the time. What do you think's going to happen here going forward with quote unquote going to the gym? I'm asking you to prognosticate. There's no right or wrong here.
Let me say this. Here's what the wake up call is for everybody. And what's disappointing for me is that now when you walk into a club, you see these people wiping down the machines. And I go, why didn't you wipe them down before? And you say, well, we never really cared about it. You go, well, you didn't care about the flu or any other bacterial infection, but now COVID, you're doing this so you can make sure you're clean. But I think what you have is when they were labeled non-essential, to me, that was a very straightforward in your face. Said, we're not opening up clubs because you're non-essential. But grocery stores, I get, are. Bars, I don't know. But until they prove that whatever, so again, COVID said, here are these comorbidities. You have a comorbidity of obesity or high blood pressure or hypertension or cardiovascular disease or whatever it is, some immune function. They didn't say you can't improve those functions and it would help you. What they said is, to the club world or the wellness world, is I'm not sure that if they go in your facility, you have the data that says when they come out that you can get the response. We don't know if you just sell memberships or do you sell outcomes.
Right.
So now John Q. Public is saying, well, maybe if it's outcomes, I can do outcomes at home. I thought you had to go to the club. Well, someone told them, ask the question, you're in charge of your health from now on. If you don't believe it, look at the people who have died. the comorbidity things are your personal health care starts with you taking care of your health. So however, wherever you choose, the outcome is up to you.
Dan, we know there was a lot of picking winners and losers, because how can the Ace Hardware down the street from me not be allowed to be open, but Home Depot and Lowe's can be open? I mean, there's a lot of things I think we have learned. Hopefully right. We'll never go through this again. But if we did, I hope there's a lot of things that have been learned right. Where going forward will be different.
Yeah. And again, I think the spa world, I think the wellness world, I think all those communities need to rethink what is it that they deliver. And is it a long-term result or is it, you know, a short-term experience? And when I first came down here, as you know, for a facility that I'm opening up with Kevin Kelly, who came up from Canyon Ranch, and Sharon, who came over from the Grand Wailea, from a spa standpoint, that was about outcomes. And you have to be able to look at when someone comes in and spends money or spends time, what do they go home with? And if it's just an experience, then we didn't teach them anything. We just sold them a day, you know, it's basically one day at Disneyland. And that's the challenge.
Well, Kevin's been a good futurist. There were a lot of other things that went on at Savannah, but that's in the past, and none of us live on the past. We have to have a right. Go forward at.
I talked to him actually more often. He's a great guy, and he's a stand-up guy.
I want to talk about us aging male baby boomers, because you said people at my age, and I'm thinking, yeah, and you and I are the same age, so we're talking together. But for those who don't know, Dan wrote a book called You're Too Old to Be Young. I read it in a weekend and love it. He told me yesterday someone read it in a day and told him how much he loved it. But I want to talk about You're Too Old to Be Young. So,
Too Old to Die Young. Die Young.
Tell our – to die young. Excuse me. You are too old to die young. And that's what I wrote down. I don't know why I didn't say it. But tell people what gave you the impetus to write the book, and then give us the short play-by-play on what the book is about.
As you know, Alan, you and I get together. There's no such thing as a short story. So sorry for people who are listening. You can't get two guys together. This is like one of those old stories. Two guys walk into a bar, and a month later they leave. You know, and I'm not posing drunks, but that's just the story. So forget the humor of it. But, you know, I sat there, and I was still amazed. You know, when I first got to grad school, we start with the cardiacs. My generation of exercise physiologists, in 1982 is when I got out of grad school, there was belief of outcomes. We could improve something. And the goal, of course, was, man, if you could ever get people to live longer, boy, everybody would want to be physically active. Everybody would want to take care of their health. And what I found out is no matter where I went, medicine on one side was always one step ahead. So, for example, if someone said, you know, I really need to eat better because my cholesterol is so bad, I'm going, okay, well, here's what we're going to do with this exercise program, because now we have outcomes that will improve HDL cholesterols, or your cholesterol fraction will change, or will lower your systolic blood pressure. So, again, how do we make an exercise program to do this? Well, on the other side, parallel to us, the docs are saying, here's a statin drug. You don't need to worry about what you eat anymore. Or here's a hypertension drug, you don't need to worry about your blood pressure, we'll control it that way. And you're going, okay, I get that for insulin, because you don't make it. But this is, you just allow this guy to retain a bad habit without having to exercise. So what we've done since you and I were born is we have this big chunk of boomers who aren't going to die young because medicine allows them to stay alive and not change their bad habits that would have killed them before the introduction of those medical, I mean, bypass surgeries was a phenomenon. Antibiotics were a phenomenon. Insulin was a phenomenon. You look at how medicine has changed, you just don't die anymore because they've got a cure to keep you to have a pulse and a bowel movement. Now, whether you have a quality of life, that's up to you, but staying alive. So the book, of course, is called, and that was the old life insurance stuff too. If you remember, if you made it to 65, you're going to make it to 85, because if they hadn't killed you by 65, you were going to make it to 85. So now the question is, what are we going to do with these boomers who all decided, I'm going to keep my bad habits and take the medications to stay alive? Where are we going to house them? Where are we going to put them? Who's going to pay for their care? And why didn't someone say, your quality of life is going to be terrible, And now, so COVID has helped with that. But so I wrote the book saying to the men I know who said, hey, I just put my father in a nursing home and I can't do that. I got to change. You got to tell me, okay, I'm not talking about thinner thighs anymore. I'm not talking about big biceps. I need to figure out what is it? Why did he go downhill so fast, but he's still miserable and he's crabby and he's grumpy and I don't want my kids to be around him. I don't remember my great grandfather. I said, well, your great grandfather dropped over dead at 72. But that was the difference. So you're too old to die young means if it hasn't killed you by now, there's a cure for it. And you will lay again, you'll go up the hill and then go down the hill and then you will lay at the bottom of the hill for a long time before someone comes in and goes, yeah, he's dead.
Dan, I thought your book, it was just fun to read, right? Like, I like fun reads. There's enough depressing news in the world give me something enlightening. My dad was very athletic and worked out his entire life. So he started bringing me to the club when I was 10 years old. So I'm 62. So I would say I have mentally been exercising in some form or another most of my adult life. It's not a good day if I'm not on the elliptical or out walking or stretching or swimming or doing something. So is that, do you think, just a mindset that might be built into some people? And are some people just, are they programmed to, I don't feel good, go to the doctor?
Well, you know, the reality is if you look at the mammal in all of us, the number one thing we try to do is to maintain our core temperature and minimize the calories we expend. Because so a fat cell was made so that you, if you ever had food, you could put it in that, like the freezer, and just keep saving it. So a mammal never runs around aimlessly. They don't just do that. So what we've done is we've created a society where we have to do this or our quality of life is so poor. And let me see if this helps you. I took my grandfather to the flagship in 1986. And he again was, you know, that generation where I thought he'd be so excited when he saw all these people exercising. And he stared at these guys in front of the mirror with these chrome dumbbells, you know, lifting weights with tank tops and all dressed up. And he saw these people on, like, at the time, they had a lot of stationary bikes and Stairmasters, and they would just sit there and, you know, ride a bike but never go anywhere, or walk up steps and never get anywhere, and lift a weight but never carry anything. And I'm thinking he's going to love it. And he's going to go, what's wrong with these people? They're not doing anything. But, and I go, well, Grandpa, that's what they do. And he goes, well, don't they get tired at their job? And I go, no, Grandpa, they're never, and he literally said, I wouldn't go around and have all these people, hey, if you want to walk around, I had cows you can go get for me, or I've got bales of hay you can carry. So in our timeline, you had to see the outcome of exercise. And what you found out is that the question is twofold. The question is you found joy in physical movement. But I will also ask you this question, is that in the half hour or 45 minutes you spend training your physical side of you, whether it's to socially get there or whatever, the next 23 hours of that day are more fun for you because of the half hour. So the exercise isn't the outcome that you're looking for. The outcome is that now when you travel, now when you're with your grandkids, you're going, they don't get tired anymore. And you go, well, that's what I want. They go, well, that's why you have to do this. And you go, oh, I thought you thought I was going to like the treadmill. And I go, you're never going to like sitting on that, but you will love never being tired or winded during the day. And so you see that as the reason why, as opposed to, I'm going to like exercise. If you like exercise, you're goofy.
We're going to wrap up, but I get to have lunch with you today. So this is a double bonus. We're doing a podcast and we get to go be together. So I love it.
We're going to eat very, very cleanly and healthy and all that stuff, but we might laugh too much for the crowd.
Great. I have two things for you. One is I want you to write your next book called Joy in Movement or Joy in Physical Movement.
Actually, I have it. You want to know what it's called?
What?
It's called Tag Your It.
Oh, I like that title too.
Because as playing kids, we always play tag, right? So let me interrupt. The problem with no one steals that name. But what we did as children to free play, to move in three dimensions, to tag, to have fun, is the same thing we should do when you're 65 and over. You got to get back to moving, social, enjoyment, have friends, get involved, be active. And so, but what would you say? Joy, find the joy in movement. Is that what you're saying?
I thought when you said it, I said, God, that is it. I find the joy in movement. And then I feel good. I notice on the days I'm on the road or I'm not able to work out, I feel very different than if I'm able to get in a 20 minute walk, a workout, a something in the,
wherever you are.
Morning. But I want to, Dan, where can people, the name of the book is You're Too Old to Die Young. Where do people buy it?
You can buy it on Amazon. And, you know, again, I find the most humbling about it is when I see the 40 to 50 year old son explain to me emotionally that they bought it for their father because he was so depressed, so downtrodden, and said, I want this for a Father's Day gift. I want my dad to be happy, and he's not. And they go, that's why I didn't buy it for themselves. They bought it for the aging male who's sitting there going, I don't like what I have become. And that I'm going, that's what I wrote it for a purpose. And it's so genuine when someone says they're happy because, like this reader at 75 said, this is unbelievable. I got a whole new outlook on retirement.
I love it.
But that's just, again, I never thought about being an author, so I'm not that arrogant.
All right, well, keep authoring, and I'll see you at lunch. Dan Zeman, thank you so much for being with us on Flock and Gather.
Thanks, Alan.
And people, remember, be kind to one another.